And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 403. And we'll ask the staff to give us a rundown on the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 403 eliminates the regulation of saccharin, laetrile, and DMSO by the State Board of Pharmacy.
Okay, and we have Tom Holt to address us today. Tom's just leaning on the edge of his chair to get up here.
Good afternoon, Chair Fisher, members of the committee. For the record, Tom Holt with the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. Senate Bill 403 is a bit of housekeeping. What it does is repeal sections of the Pharmacy Act related to Laetrile, DMSO, and saccharin. All three of these provisions are in the Act from controversies that were big back in the 60s and 70s, and really are no longer current. Laetrile, as some of you may know, was a cancer treatment that's been thoroughly discredited. DMSO is still used for veterinary purposes, but not at all used in a pharmacy type of setting. And of course, saccharin is the sweetener. There was some question back in the 70s of whether or not it would be continued to be used, and somebody put this into the Pharmacy Act for reasons we don't know, but it certainly doesn't need to be there now. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Yes, Senator Morse.
I was a little bit concerned when I read the text of this bill that you're messing with, Tom, because this is probably the most important futuristic legislation that was passed during the last session, and I just wanted to be sure that you weren't doing anything to it. Thank you.
Sounds like Senator Morissette has a paternal
Yes, I do.
Feeling towards some of these issues. Is there anyone that wished to testify further on Senate Bill 403? Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 403.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 403 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morissette moves that we send Senate Bill 403 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, will clerk call the roll?
Senator Brown. Senator Burdick.
Aye.
Senator Carno. Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Fisher.
Aye. Motion carries. Senator Morissette, do you wish to give this paternal help on the floor?
Yes, I would be very happy to talk about
Senator.
Electronic transmission of prescriptions.
That's our next.
That's all I'm going to talk about.
That's the next one.
Okay. The wording is in here, too, Paul.
Okay.
Motion carries. Senator Morissette will be the carrier. Close the work session on Senate Bill 403 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 404.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 404 requires an original prescription record to be filed at a pharmacy that filled the prescription. It allows certain prescription records to be filed electronically and requires that prescription records on file be readily accessible for inspection.
Okay. We have again the same testifier. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay. Again, for the record, Tom Holt with the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. This bill continues the futuristic work of Senator Morissette from the last session.
Thank you.
We had a bill that we went through all the Pharmacy Act and the Medicaid statute to add the provision to be able to keep records electronically where they were previously required to be kept on paper, and this was just a little provision that we missed in doing that. What this bill then will do is allow a pharmacy, when they receive a phone call or an electronic transmission of a prescription, to just enter it into their prescription database and have that be the record instead of having to create a piece of paper that you're going to file away and never look at, and then also create the electronic version. All the information is still there and accessible in the pharmacy system as far as what was prescribed, what was dispensed, and costs and all that stuff. It's just allowing the pharmacy to do it in another form. Now, I would point out the way this is worded, we're anticipating that the DEA is going to allow electronic transmission of scheduled drugs, narcotics, in the not-too-distant future. And so whenever they get around to doing that, the way this is worded, we won't have to change the Oregon Pharmacy Act again to keep up. So at the point that it becomes permissible by the DEA to have electronic transmission, we'll be able to do it here for that particular class of drugs.
I do have a concern. Is there going? Will there? Does this require a backup file for the record keeping? Because electronic transmission on a particular, unless there's a backup file, that could be lost. And I'm wondering if there.
Chair Fisher and Senator Morissette. The pharmacies are required to make their records available for, I think it's up to 7 years in some cases. And it's their responsibility then to have appropriate take backups and so on to be able to have that information be accessible.
Good. Thank you.
Further questions, Tom? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 404.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 404 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morissette moves that we send Senate Bill 404 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Brown?
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Carno? Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye. The motion carries. Do you wish to take care of this one, too? All right. Senator Morissette will carry this, and the bill is passed, and we will close the work session on Senate Bill 404. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 646.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 646 makes physician assistant an agent of supervising licensees when performing practice-related activities. And I'm going to go next door and pick up Senator Ferrioli, who wants to testify on all three bills.
All right.
Do we have some written testimony on any of these?
I don't know. We have
We do. Yes.
Mr. Chair, my apologies for being late. I had some constituents stop by unexpectedly. So.
Well, I'm glad that your order of work is showing preference to your constituents. They're our most important item.
As long as they're still talking to me.
Not that they were.
Do we want to start with, is that Ruba, Ted?
Ruba?
Yeah, we're waiting for Senator Ferrioli, but while we're waiting, let's call Ted, is it Rurback?
Here he comes.
Oh, here's the man himself. Come right ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's so important we waited for you.
Thank you. Senator, Mr. Chairman, State Senator Ted O'Ferrioli. I reside in Grande, Oregon. Mr. Chairman, there are three bills before you. Are we looking at all three of the bills?
646 at the moment, but I will... Do you wish to do all three of them at once?
If you don't mind, Senator, that would, I think...
all right, I will open the public hearing on not only Senate Bill 646, but 647 and 648 to help your schedule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 646, 647, and 648 all relate to the practice and the scope of work of Physician's Assistants. In one case, Senate Bill 646 makes the physician assistant agent of the supervising licensee when performing practice-related activities. I will let Mr. Koba and others that have come here explain the technical issues, but essentially it's that when a physician assistant is rendering services under the supervision of a physician to whom he is authorized to practice, that the physician assistant becomes the agent of the supervising person. And that, of course, has to do with all of the diagnostic and therapeutic medical services that are rendered by the physician's assistants. It is only, Mr. Chairman, under the supervision of the physician that the physician's assistant renders their services. And there is, in my opinion, an agency relationship between the physician's assistant and the physician that is doing the supervising. This merely recognizes in law that relationship. Senate Bill 647 expands the scope of practice of physician's assistants by allowing them to prescribe certain medications, and among those medications are controlled substances on Schedule H, which are narcotic and pain reliever type of substances, Mr. Chairman. And then Senate Bill 648 authorizes the physician assistant to sign a death certificate. And Mr. Chairman, I just would point out that in many of the physician's assistants are the attending medical personnel at the time of death, particularly in rural areas. They are well qualified to determine the cause of death, primarily because they've been practicing in the area, often with the decedent, providing medical services to the decedent. And in those cases of long-term illness or well-known pathology, the physician's assistant is as well qualified as any other medical practitioner to sign the death certificate and fill out the certificate as to cause of death. So, Mr. Chairman, these three bills are primarily aimed at increasing the utility of the physician's assistant and in not only doing their administrative duties, signing death certificates and so forth, but allowing them to prescribe pain relief medications as are needed, and also just to recognize that there is not an arm's length relationship between the physician's assistant and the physicians from whom they work, but a supervised relationship that is in fact a form of agency. So, Mr. Chairman, I think these are three bills that are well-reasoned and perfectly reasonable under the existing scope of work and scope of practice that physician's assistants find themselves.
Any questions of
Senator O'Farioli?
Yeah, I noticed the addition of the...
It's just for the day.
Oh, considering that it was St. Patrick's Day.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Brown.
Senator O'Farioli, you might not...
top of the morning to you, ma'am.
Top of the morning to you,
and
too.
And the rest of the day to you.
Senate Bill 646, was there a particular problem you were trying to resolve in bringing this bill before us?
Madam Chairman, I'll let Mr. Koba and others describe more particularly the problems that are related, but I think it has everything to do with a chain of command and supervisory, and probably has a great deal to do with liability.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
No further questions. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, it's been a pleasure to be here with you today, and hope you have a great hearing and great rest of the day.
For coming to grace the Human Resources Committee.
But thank you, Senator O'Fisher.
Okay,
so I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 647 and 648 and continue with public hearing on 646.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Marshall Koba, representing the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. Thank you very much for this hearing today. With me is Ted Rubeck, president of the society. As Senator Farioli said, we have three bills before the committee today, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Rubeck. Thank you.
Thank you, Marshall. Chairman Fisher and members of the Senate Human Resources Committee, my name is Ted Rubeck, president of the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants, whom I represent today, asking you to support Senate Bill 646, 647, and 648. I've been a physician assistant now for 24 years, including 15 years of full-time practice as a PA in pediatrics. I came to Oregon in 1994, recruited by the Oregon Health and Science University to develop and implement the first PA program in the state, as proposed in Senate Bill 81 in 1993. The first students matriculated into the OHSU PA program in 1995, and since then we have graduated 111 PAs. Approximately 63% of them live and practice in Oregon. Besides my role as program director of the OHSU PA program, I'm head of the Division of Physician Assistant Education in the School of Medicine at OHSU, and I have served as chair of the Education Council of the American Academy of Physician Assistants and in other roles representing my profession in both the state and national level. We're here today to testify in support of three bills sponsored by Senator Farioli, and I hope I can only do as well as he did in describing them to you. The first is Senate Bill 646.
Why don't we just confine our remarks to 646?
Sounds good. The first is Senate Bill 646. Okay. First is Senate Bill 646 that proposes adding language to our statute that clarifies the role of physician assistants as an agent of the supervising physician. In practice, PAs provide medical services as part of a team. The language proposed in SB 646 is recommended as part of model legislation supported by the American Academy of Physician Assistants. It is designed to more accurately define the relationship between the PA and the supervising physician. Frequently, and I think this responds somewhat to Senator Brown's question, frequently other members of the healthcare team are placed in the position of carrying out the orders of PAs when it is not entirely clear to them that the PA has the authority to issue such orders. In the past, when such an issue has arisen, we have relied upon the advice received in a letter from an assistant attorney general in 1984 that stated in a case involving a nurse that, quote, a nurse may rely on the apparent authority of a physician assistant to issue medical orders on behalf of the supervising physician, much the same as one may rely on the acts of an agent for a principal. Subsequently, the Board of Nursing has declared that, quote, medical prescriptions for client care came from a physician may be transmitted to the nurse through a physician assistant who is the physician's authorized representative or agent. SB 646 places in statute language to support the role of the PA as an agent of the supervising physician. It does not add privileges for the PA or expose any member of the healthcare team to additional liability in carrying out the orders of a PA. Ultimately, SB 646 will enhance the delivery and quality of care and the efficiency of care delivered to patients by the healthcare team by more clearly defining the authority as it already exists that PAs have in the performance of their practice-related activities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Senator Brown.
Excuse my ignorance. Could you talk a little bit about the training that a physician assistant receives and how one gets to be a physician's assistant?
Surely. There are 133 PA programs across the country. There are two presently in Oregon, one at OHSU and one at Pacific University. I certainly can speak to our curricula, but I think you'll find it similar across the country in that we are required to maintain accreditation standards that do foster a certain amount of level playing field across the board.
Standardization.
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you very much. In any case, our program is 26 months in length. It's a master's level program. Students enter our program with already having a bachelor's degree. They usually have the average of about 4 to 6 years of previous healthcare experience before entering our program. They complete a 12-month didactic education taught primarily by the faculty of the School of Medicine in all areas and subspecialties of medicine. They get a strong basic science component in education. They also get a psychosocial tract of education as well. Following that, they have 14 months of supervise clinical practice in rotations in a variety of subspecialties and primary care specialties across the state. These are 5-week, minimum of 40-hour-a-week type rotations. So this is basically their full-time job in the last 14 months of their education. So the education actually provides didactic information to them, as well as approximately 2,400 hours in our program of supervised clinical experience working directly with PAs and primarily physicians across the state in their own practices in order to put into practice what they've learned in the classroom.
Thank you. Ms. Jillian.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you. You said that this bill wouldn't change the liability setup at all. How does the liability work? If the physician assistant gives an order and that order turns out to be a mistake, who's liable, the physician assistant or the MD?
Chair Fisher, Senator Burdick, in that case, actually, we are defined as a dependent practitioner. We are licensed with a supervising physician by the Board of Medical Examiners. They have the ultimate responsibility for our acts. In my way of thinking, this bill actually helps define that better, so that those that might take an order from the PA, actually, I think their liability is reduced by the fact that it's more clearly identified that the PA is actually acting as an agent of the physician in making orders in all of the medical practices that they're involved in. So in direct answer to your question, both are liable, both the physician assistant as well as the supervising physician.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator.
And so that wouldn't change. They would both still be liable if a mistake were made from the same degree.
Yes. In fact, this bill does not change that relationship at all. Again, it's our attempt to more clearly define that, primarily for others on the healthcare team that have less understanding of how the relationship between a PA and their supervising physician exists. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much. I'll call Tim Martinez.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's not O. Martinez. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tim Martinez, here today on behalf of the Oregon Medical Association.
When you get done, it may be Ole Martinez.
That's probably true. I'll try to be brief, Mr. Chairman. I hear what you're saying. I did have the privilege of meeting with the PA folks last week and went through all three of these bills. I will confine myself at this moment to Senate Bill 646. I think the issue that they're trying to address in 646 is really highlighted in their second bullet point under solution. And that's the one that talks about other healthcare practitioners on the healthcare team are often called upon to carry out the orders of a physician assistant. The language in this bill will enhance the care provided by patients. So as I understand it, they occasionally run into difficulty with other members of the healthcare team in having those other folks carry out their orders. We believe that 646 as written goes well beyond that and really does put a new liability, vicarious liability on medical doctors that choose to work with the PAs. Typically, Oregon courts look to the nature of the relationship and the level of control over the actions of another in determining whether an agency relationship exists. And when you look at medical malpractice, Oregon courts have not imposed the captain of the ship doctrine in all cases. They have in certain cases, but not in all cases. And instead, they look to see whether the physician is in a position to exercise direct supervision and control over the actor, in this case, the physician assistant. And a physician cannot be held liable for preoperative or postoperative care performed in the physician's absence. More recently, in 1999, the Oregon Court of Appeals stated that a physician could not be directly or vicariously liable when there is no evidence of personal responsibility on the part of the physician. So the example I gave to the chair earlier today is if I'm a physician in Roseburg and a physician assistant under my authority in Myrtle Creek may do something without my direct involvement, currently it would be up to the courts to decide what that physician liability would be. Were this bill to pass, it would make it very clear that that physician is going to be the liable party. Again, we think case law supports that, and we're comfortable with the current case law that would require a degree of supervision. And with that, I would point you to the BME and some of their rules. They actually define supervision under OAR 847050010. They broadly define supervision, and then under that, they talk about direct supervision, general supervision, and personal supervision. So there is varying levels. We would be happy at the chair's request to sit down and meet with the physician's assistants and see if we could find some language that would accomplish what they're after without putting this new liability piece on the medical doctors.
Further questions?
Senator Morissette.
Kim, you are going to be here for the next bill, right? You're going to testify on that?
Mr. Chairman, questions. Senator Morissette, I would be happy to do that.
My question will be for the next bill.
Okay, I'm going to suggest, in the absence of further questions, I'm going to suggest that we do just that and have you get together with the physician's assistants and see what we can do on this, and I'll be prepared to bring it back as quickly as we can reach some type of agreement, because I see the argument on both sides. It's something, and incidentally, I appreciate the workability that we have here. It's sometimes gets pretty tense in some of these issues, and I appreciate on both sides approaching this in a very professional manner. Would suggest that and offer my staff. I'm getting very free with offering my staff as a go-between in some of these things, and she's done a wonderful job for me. She never lets me down. So we'll have her contact you folks and set up a meeting, or you can set up the meetings together, and we can arrange to have any amendments drafted or whatever needs to be done.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 646 and open a public hearing. I'm going to take these in reverse because I'm going to lose a member here pretty quick, and I don't know when I'm going to get the other one back. So I would like to do Senate Bill 648 with a public hearing. Go ahead, staff here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 648 authorizes a physician assistant to sign a death certificate.
Okay, go ahead. We don't call you doctor, but
Doctor's fine. Ted is.
All right.
Chairman Fisher and members of the committee, Senate Bill 648 authorizes physician assistants to sign death certificates. The request for this increased authority for physician assistants arises from the fact that PAs are utilized to a greater extent in settings in which they participate in the care of terminally ill and dying patients. When a patient dies, a physician must be called in to complete and sign a death certificate. In addition, many PAs now practice in rural areas and frontier areas in which they may be the only available health care provider. This results in unnecessary delays in the final disposition of the body as a physician is called in to certify the death. Undue delays add stress and confusion at an already difficult time for family and friends. SB 648 adds PAs to the list of qualified health care professionals, which presently includes physicians and nurse practitioners who are authorized to complete and sign death certificates. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Is there anyone that wishes to testify further on Senate Bill 648? Seeing none, thank you very much, Ted.
Thank you.
And I will close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 648.
Mr. Chair, I would
Senator Morissette.
Move Senate Bill 648 to the chair or to the floor of the Senate with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Morissette moves that we pass Senate Bill 648 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call a roll?
Senator Brown? Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Carno? Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
And Senator Fisher?
Aye. I wonder if Senator Farioli seems to be very interested in this. Let's have him do that. If he won't, doesn't want to do it, I'll do it. Okay, the motion carries, and we have carrier, so we will close the work session on Senate Bill 648 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 647.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 647 would expand the type of controlled substances that can be prescribed by a physician assistant.
Okay, and I have Scott Beyer who wishes to speak, and others.
Senator Fisher and committee, thank you for allowing me to testify on Senate Bill 647. I am Scott Beyer. I'm a physician assistant who has been practicing 13 years in the specialty of orthopedics in the Portland metropolitan area. I also serve as a legislative chair with the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants and have been involved in legislative aspects of OSPA for the last 10 years. During the last 6 years, we've seen the physician assistants continue to grow within the state with the production, with the offering of two schools. The amount of PAs have continued to expand, so has the opportunities that they can find. Some of these opportunities have now brought in the fact that we are limited by not being able to have prescriptive authority for Schedule II medications. Some examples of that would be the treatment of pain, both in acute and chronic aspects. With the last legislative session and the intractable pain law that was put in effect and the pain commission that was formed, a PA now serves on that committee. We now see physician assistants who are now working in pain centers, both in the Portland metropolitan area and in other areas around the state. This involves the use of long-acting narcotics that are not found in Schedule III medications but are found in Schedule II medications. This also is used for the acute setting, both involved in surgical care of patients postoperatively and also acute care for emergency and trauma settings. And the use of Schedule II medications has been well seen within the area of pediatrics, specifically with the treatment of ADHD. And there are a number of PAs who are working specifically with kids and are being evaluated for that condition. In the handout that you've received is a little bit of a background about our Senate Bill 647, and included with that are at least 14 letters from physicians around the state, which I understand that this meeting it was just called. We were able to gather some of that information, but expect a lot more to come in as we continue to look at this issue. I would like to present some scenarios of how PAs are utilized in this area. The first, I mentioned the first one, which was in a pain center. With the aspect of pain centers now available, most of the pain centers have three or four physicians on staff and are utilizing physician assistants also to evaluate and follow chronic pain patients, both either with cancer or intractable pain that cannot be solved by any other issue. This has involved the use, again, of long-acting narcotics, which is, again, not available under Schedule III. An example of a PA has been used in hospice. I can give you an example of a PA. Her name is Kate Grace, who works in Halfway, Oregon. She is heavily involved with hospice. As our society continues to become a geriatric society and we continue to see people live longer, we also see a lot more cancer being found early and also being followed and treated for longevity of livelihood. Part of that has been the ability to be able to use pain medications so they can live a fulfilled life in an everyday living situation. Some of the difficulties that have happened is, like, for instance, in Halfway, and this is also as true in the urban area, if the physician is not physically there at the time the patient comes in, that patient has to wait in order to get a prescription for a Schedule II medication. In Halfway, that can be a one-week wait. In Portland, Oregon, that can be a 24 to 48-hour wait. So with the understanding that the physician assistant can see patients without the physician being directly there, as Mr. Martinez testified, there are three types of supervision, but by far the majority of us are under a general supervision, which means the physician has to be within a reasonable distance and from where the physician assistant is practicing, but does not have to be in the complex. So there's a lot of times that we see individuals, for instance, in my example, working in a surgical unit, surgical area, where I see post-operative patients who have run out of their pain medication. They've stopped by for a refill. I'm the only one in the office at that time seeing patients, and I'm unable to give it to them. So I can give them something less that they have to take more of that's not as good, or I can give them something that they continue to take until they're able to be weaned down to a lesser medication and finally no medication at all. I think a big concern that a lot of people have is the protection of this aspect, and I know the Board of Medical Examiners put that in writing. In your information, we listed that 26 states have Schedule II authorities for physician assistance. It's important to note, first thing, is that in all 26 states, when that level was increased to Schedule II, there was no increased use of the diversion program by physician assistants. So history throughout the United States has shown that if someone's going to have a problem with medication, they're going to have a problem with medication, and that increasing that up to a level that will enhance patient care and patient convenience and physician convenience does not increase the risk of a physician assistant having difficulties with that. We also see that the fact that the way that this would be able to entail is the fact that we work under a practice description. So what we do as a physician assistant and as a physician is we go to the Board of Medical Examiners, and in writing we present them a plan of treatment for how we are going to work our combination or our team. So the Board of Medical Examiners reviews that and decides, well, is that reasonable or unreasonable for that team concept to work in the setting that it's placed? Once that has been approved, then they continue to follow what occurs in that team concept. Both the Drug Enforcement Agency and also the Board of Pharmacy also tracks narcotic use. So there's a combination of things going on. One of the aspects that this would entail for better completeness of statistics is the fact that right now when the PA has to give a Schedule II medication, they go over to their physician or wait till the physician comes in, get a prescription signed, and they take care and give it to that patient. Even though that physician may not have been involved with that patient, they're going off of the team concept and trust that they've developed with their physician assistant. If a physician assistant is able to prescribe Schedule IIs, their name will now become on the prescription. So you're going to be able to track, well, how many medications are actually being written by PAs, because right now that is not tracked. And that may or may not be an important point, but I think that with other states being looked at, we haven't seen that be an issue in regards to the physician assistants overprescribing or having difficulties with that. It's also important to see on the stat sheet that none of the 26 states that brought in Schedule IIs ever rescinded that. So they never changed or amended that aspect once that privilege was given. I think that the diversion program is available here. We all follow it and consider it an important aspect. So if there was ever a problem, we do have an avenue for those problems to be treated. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes, I understand you have an amendment.
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Marshall Koba. We have the -1 amendments, and it was just to clarify the bill that, as it came out of LC, was not, and we were up against the deadline, so we just realized we would take care of it in committee.
So basically, you're striking paragraph 6.
Exactly, just striking paragraph 6 and adding the Schedule 2 in paragraph 5.
Okay. Go ahead, ma'am.
Good afternoon. My name is Pat Kennymore, and I am a physician assistant. I've been practicing for approximately 12 years. In addition to maintaining a part-time practice in general internal medicine, I'm also the associate director and academic coordinator of the Oregon Health and Science University PA program. So I'm the person who is directly responsible for the entire didactic curriculum for all the PAs who do attend the program up at OHSU. I wanted to speak briefly about the education that we provide in terms of preparing for prescriptive practice. As Senator Brown mentioned, we are governed by accreditation standards across the United States, which do require that we prepare our PA students for prescriptive practice. As part of that prescriptive practice preparation, I wanted to just illuminate some of the content areas that our students do receive, and I think that what our students receive is fairly common to most PA programs around the U.S. They get approximately 10 to 12 hours that directly relates to the prescription of medications that have the ability to alter sensation, including principles in pain management, pharmacokinetics, and pharmacodynamics. They have a two-hour block on prescribing issues that delineates the legalities associated with the different drugs and the different categories. They get 2 hours on narcotic analgesics. They also have sections in their clinical medicine content that deal with addiction medicine as well as management of chronic pain. So I wanted to just let you know that there is a fairly large amount of didactic content that is provided to students. Yet another role that I play, I am an item writer for the National Board of Medical Examiners and the National Commission on the Certification of PAs, and I do write test questions that appear on the national exam that all PAs must pass in order to have state licensure. And I wanted to let you know that there are questions that relate to prescriptive practice, particularly as it relates to narcotics and other controlled substances as well. Thank you for the opportunity. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Senator Morissette.
Thank you. I was going to ask how that compares to the training a regular physician has, mm-hmm. and I will ask that question if you could do it briefly, but there's a part two.
Mm-hmm.
As it stands right now, I understand there needs to be a second opinion if a physician prescribes a level two, schedule two drug. But what you're asking is that it's kind of scary, I think, that a physician assistant who is not a physician can prescribe a level two without even consulting the physician if he's out in John Day somewhere and there is no physician available. Of course, John Day has physicians, but it seems like we're really stretching it. We're going from a second opinion from a physician to no opinion at all from a physician. Now, I guess I want to know what the difference in training is for a physician and a physician's assistant in terms of level Schedule 2 drugs.
Yes.
Senator Morissette, I hear your question being a two-part, and I'm going to have Pat answer the second part. The first part is your concern about physician involvement in the treatment of those Schedule 2 medications. The first part, the second opinion is for someone who's going to be on chronic intractable pain for a long period of time. That second opinion has to be given if that medication is going to be used for an exceeded period of time and presented to the Board of Medical Examiners so they understand and know that this patient is receiving long-term narcotics. And the same rule would abide by us. Understanding that is now right now going through legislation, but if that continued to hold true, we'd have to follow the same rules. How we are followed by is any work we do has to be reviewed by a physician. We're dependent practitioners. So physician involvement has to be either in a physical presence, has to be either by a written presence, but they still have to be there. They still have to be there at least every other week. So every 14 days, physician has to be there. They have to review a certain amount of charts, and they have to know about what's going on. That's how we work. So the fact is that if the physician did not know what was going on, it was the physician's responsibility to do that. We take great pride in communicating. I don't think you'll find any PA that doesn't try to communicate with their physicians about what they're doing in their practice and has their full involvement. I can use an example for myself. We attempt to have 90% of my chart notes reviewed by the physician. If he is out of town and I'm seeing patients, that's well beyond what's needed, but that's what we do in our practice just so I can keep a team concept. Same team concept could be held for 10% of charts if the physician and the PA have a relationship that they feel comfortable with. So the physician needs to know and should know at all times what is going on with the patients in that concept. And if that is not happening, that's a downfall in the communication between the physician and the PA, but not of how the policy is set up to handle it.
To answer the other half of your question, Scott did mention the fact that there is a difference between short-term administration of Schedule II medications versus long-term administration, and they are handled quite differently. But in regards to how the medical school trains their soon-to-be physicians, mm-hmm. it's quite comparable. The content areas that the physicians get are virtually identical to what we get. They get it in a different form and a different sequence because their program is over the course of 4 years and ours is not, but the content areas are just the same. In many cases, the instructors are identical as well. We have the same people do the lecture content for us as also are speaking for the medical students too.
May I follow?
Yes.
I guess I was not getting at so much the course content, but the amount of time spent in the different ways that a physician being trained would utilize the time, mm-hmm. as opposed to a shorter one-time or two-time or three-time presentation, is, you know, just the whole scope of the training is what I was getting at.
The training of, I'm the wrong person to ask about training of medical students, but I do teach for the medical school, so I can at least speak to my understanding of it. Their education is heavy in the basic sciences, heavier than the physician assistant training is, primarily because our applicants come in with a wealth of experience already. The whole concept of PAs came about as a result of people who had many years of direct patient care experience without necessarily having the education. So our foundations are somewhat different. So in the first 2 years of medical school, there's a stronger emphasis on basic science. In the second 2 years of medical school, they are clinical rotation, supervised clinical practice, much like what the PAs do, only we do a lesser number of rotations than the medical students do. So in terms of your time, I think that yes, you can say that there is a shorter amount of time involved in becoming a licensed physician assistant, but many of the same safeguards that are there for physicians are there for physician assistants as well, including the requirement of a national exam, which is administered by the National Board of Medical Examiners, as well as in order to maintain our certification, we complete 100 hours of continuing medical education every 2 years, which is very high considering what most board subspecialties in medicine require.
Senator Fisher, if I can also comment real quick. The other thing that I did forget to mention, which I think is an extremely important fact, is the fact that not all PAs have to have Schedule II authority. Right now in our practice description, there is a box that the physician checks and signs along with the PA that says, I feel that this is a needed item within the practice that I'm working in. The physician and the PA would both have options not to check that box. And so if the physician felt uncomfortable about the setting that they were in or they're about their ability to do the supervision of that, they would have the option to not check that box and not sign it. And even though this law would take effect, that PA, by level of practicing outside the level of his practice description, would be breaking the law. So the still falls back to the fact that this does not become a blanket, all PAs can prescribe Schedule IIs. It allows the ability that if the PA and the physician come together and see a need for that within their practice for their patient care, be it in a rural area, a frontier area, or an urban area, that ability is there for them.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Burdick.
I also had a question in this regard on liability. Right now, I mean, if you had a physician assistant and the physician, like, phoned in the prescription, the physician assistant would be able to give that prescription to the patient, right, as long as it was prescribed by the doctor under current situation?
Unfortunately, Schedule II medications are not allowed to be phoned in, and that's been part of the problem, especially in some of the rural communities. An actual hard copy must be filled out and taken to the pharmacy in order for that to be filled. If it were a question of it being phoned in, it would be a relatively easy thing to manage, but because Schedule IIs are managed a little bit differently, it won't work quite that way.
So if you had a situation here, because some of these are pretty powerful drugs, if you had a physician assistant prescribing the drug to the patient and then there was some bad effect, who would be liable, the physician assistant or the doctor?
Again, it would be a question likely of both being liable, but I would like to point out that we already have prescriptive authority with Schedules 3 through 5, including scheduled drugs such as codeine and that sort of thing. So many of the drugs are already available for PAs to prescribe. It's just a question as to, as Scott mentioned, the length of activity and that sort of thing. So the chance exists now that someone could have an adverse effect from a medication, and yet we're not seeing that that happening.
Okay, thanks.
Senator Morissette.
Could I ask Kathleen Haley to come forward and answer some questions?
I was just going to ask them because thank you folks very much.
Senator Fisher?
Yes.
Excuse me, may I add just one small point? Our friends at the OMA had handed us an amendment as we were walking up here, so we really haven't had a chance to review that, and we will do so as soon as possible. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going into subcommittee status here. Senator Brown should be back shortly and put us back in full committee, but we can continue to take testimony. I want to officially adopt a letter in support of Senate Bill 647 from Dr. John R. Handy from the Oregon Clinic. I have also... a letter from Dr. David K. Winchester, MD, from the Urology Clinic in support. I have a letter from Dr. James M. Benton from the Asante Health System, and 8 letters from the physicians on the Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Northwest in support. I'm going to enter those into the record. And I have a letter here from Kathleen Haley, and if you're going to present that, I won't bother to enter it into the record, or I can enter it into the record for you if you prefer. And I'll do that then, and this letter is in opposition to 647, SB 647. And I will ask Kathleen Haley and Tim, do you wish to indicate to us what your amendment?
When is appropriate, Mr. Chairman?
That's fine. Why don't you come up with... Kathleen Haley.
May I ask?
Yes, Senator Morissette. We're back in full committee status.
Kathleen Haley, who is executive director of the Board of Medical Examiners. In reading your letter, you have a concern about that under the terms of this bill, there would be no additional education requirements for physician assistants dealing with a substance to substance. Could you talk a little bit about the additional training that you think they should have, that you imply that they should have?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, for the record, my name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Medical Examiners. The in looking at the background and training that a physician has going into the practice of medicine, they have 10 to 16 years of medical training and 100 to 135 hours directed toward pharmacology. And it's our understanding that physician assistants have in the range of 40 to 78 hours of pharmacology education. So it's that discrepancy in training and the potency of the medications that physician assistants are interested in prescribing that caused the board concern at this point. In addition, as you know, we do receive complaints about physicians who have a difficult time managing these pain medicines. So we anticipate greater number of disciplinary actions against physician assistants, which I'm happy to say we haven't had very many complaints or disciplinary actions against physician assistants up to this time.
What, may I?
In other words, you're padding your bets.
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead, Senator.
Okay. What, I'm not sure if you can answer this question now, but at some point, what do you think would be, as far as you're concerned, or your the Board of Medical Examiners, sufficient training for them to go ahead and do this? Now, I guess I'm looking at, I don't want to say the worst case scenario, but a scenario where in a frontier part of the mm-hmm. state where there is not a physician that is in almost constant contact, and if a prescription is written for something, you know, for Schedule 2, all of the drugs that are listed here, some of which I guess are already under their domain. No?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, the Schedule 2 drugs that I listed in the memo that I sent to you are not within.
Are not within.
Right.
Okay. So would there be any circumstance that you would favor a bill that would give them that authority?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, I had a chance to look at the amendment proposed by the OMA, and I think that would go more toward what the board was looking for, but I really would want to talk to the physician okay. members of our board first.
I didn't see that amendment yet. I mean, here it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know.
Incidentally, for the record, these are proposed amendments and not officially drawn amendments. So.
Excuse me.
I guess I would add, then, Mr. Chair, I would ask Tim to comment on what we were talking about.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, again, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Medical Association. We have taken a look at Senate Bill 647. One of our outside counsel, I think, fancies himself a legislative counsel, so he always writes amendments that make it look like they came out of LC, but it's very clearly that they're OMA-proposed amendments to Senate Bill 647. And with those amendments, with the committee's approval with those amendments, the OMA would be more comfortable with this legislation as well. We unfortunately, as you can see from the timestamp on them, were able to get them to the physician assistants just moments before the committee met, actually after the committee was meeting, and would be happy to discuss them with the physician assistants. Again, as we understand it, the issue is their supervising physician goes out of town or is unavailable. They call another physician and ask for the Schedule 2 to be prescribed. The physician on call is nervous about it, is nervous about my friend to the right, is nervous about the DEA, and says, I just don't want to do that, and frankly, the patient suffers. So we think with these safeguards, we could make this a workable bill. I'm not sure why I make this deal.
I think perhaps for Senator Morissette's satisfaction, we might introduce a bill here to take it out on anybody that would be impersonating an LC.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, it may be that Mr. Cooney Jr., Tom Cooney Jr., attended Lewis and Clark College at a law school and had the privilege of being in Kathleen Beaufay's legal legislative drafting class, which I did, and it was a really wonderful experience. I'm not sure I learned anything, but other than I'm sure I don't want to be a legislative council person, but obviously Mr. Cooney did. So.
Um. I suppose out of necessity, if not courtesy, we ought to have the physician's assistants up here have a chance, at least they, I guess, have had a chance to read this proposed amendment. And I feel probably that maybe we should just include this in a working arrangement with Senate Bill 646. Would that be reasonable? Okay, then we'll just go ahead and save everybody's time and work toward that. And I see some nods in the back from the physician's assistants. And I would like to very much to offer my thanks for the professionalism and the caliber of testimony we've had today that has allowed for what I consider to be a good workable relationship to lead this August hearing, and appreciate it very much, and we'll look forward to furthering the disposition of these bills as fast as we can get some of the agreement here. So,
could I ask Senator Morissette a question of Kathleen? Have you seen this amendment? Have you had a chance to look at it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, yes, I have, and it looks good to me, but I would like to run it by the physicians that serve on the board.
Yeah. Could I make just a quick statement? I very much support the physician assistant group because I think they provide an extremely important service, and so I'm not in any way trying to lessen the importance of the organization. I guess what I am concerned about, particularly in rural Oregon where you are most important, because I know that many times you're the only medical provider in the area, but having just gone through this very long testimony over intractable pain and the difficulty and the whole business of making, getting a second opinion and so on and so forth, this suddenly jumps out at me, and so that's the reason I'm raising these questions, and I hope that we can come back and pass this bill through without any difficulty if everyone can agree with it. So thank you.
I appreciate that statement, and would say that is my own intention to get this facilitated as quickly as possible, because it's not even so much rural areas anymore, but of course you may look at Roseburg as being quite rural, but we're an awful lot larger than most of our rural settings, where a lot of our physician assistants are the only medical treatment available to folks from many miles around, and physicians down there are beginning to depend very much on physicians' assistants to extend their ability to treat their clients. So appreciate it very much, and we'll work on this just as fast as we can. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 647, and our committee is adjourned. Thank you, committee.
Thank you very much.